Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I am so excited about this hour. And I'm never nervous ever. Like, first of all, ever. But I did say to someone today, when an interviewer is interviewing an interviewer, it gets a little weird. And so, Sam, can you please bring in Brenda's microphone? Brenda Van Langen is our guest this hour. And I've been trying to get you on this program since I met you at a comedy show with a mutual friend of ours. You are bringing a gift of a documentary to the world called If Not For Them. And so you and I are out one night with some mutual friends, and I'm like, now, wait a minute. I knew I recognized you. And anyone listening, if they saw you, would recognize you. You usually have headphones on because you have been a commentator. You're with ESPN. You have been doing sidelines and analyst work for 30 years. You have seen it all courtside.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide, I'm going to do a documentary about women in basketball. Like, how did that even come up?
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm so excited to talk about this. And yeah, well, I've had a career for 30 years in sports television because of the women that paved the way, that when it wasn't popular, when it was difficult.
Yeah.
And I wanted to pay homage to them and thank them. And I was talking to Marcia Sharp, who is the Texas Tech coach, right after Pat Summitt passed away. So Pat Summitt was the all-time winningest coach in women's basketball, and her career and life was cut short because of Alzheimer's. And right after that, I was talking to Marcia Sharp, and she said, you know, we have a lot of people that are in their retirement years that were starting to lose their stories, and we need to do something to preserve their stories. And she was kind of encouraging me to write a book something like that, right? And I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, that sounds great. And then kind of went on about life. And then COVID hit, and I learned that you could do a Zoom interview and record it. And I thought, this might be the way to capture some of these stories. And that's how it started.
So you have a media preview that I was so thrilled to be able to sit down and watch over the weekend for If Not For Them. And the media preview in and of itself is lengthy. There are going to be multiple episodes of this. And what I want our listeners to understand, especially anyone with daughters who's watching Caitlin Clark right now, or anyone who's a father that has started watching with their daughters, I think it's important for young girls and young women to understand that while we still have a ways to go, if you look back, and in your documentary you do, into the 40s and the 50s and the 1960s, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, mm-hmm. how far we have come. And I wrote this down this morning when I was rewatching episode 2. The word alarming was used back in the early days when women started saying, we want to compete. Mm. We want to compete. We don't just want to play a pickup league. We don't want to play rec. In college specifically, we want to compete. And the pushback they got was, and the word was alarming, that people thought it was alarming that women would want to be involved in competition.
For decades and decades in this country, and this is like from the 1920s until the 1970s, women were banned from competing in sports in high schools and colleges across the country. Banned.
I'm pretty sure no one knows that outside of... I'm telling you, I go rewind that. What did you just say?
Mm-hmm.
Women were banned.
That's right. And and before that, you know, we all know around this area, James Naismith invented basketball. A couple months later, a woman named Senda Berenson picked it up from him, started teaching it in her PE classes, modified it a little bit, and women loved it. And for like over 20 years, women were playing basketball and competing all over the country. And then this wave went through the country that said, oh, we can't be allowing women to compete. And it happened right after women got the right to vote. So it was like this effort to basically suppress women, like don't let them be physical, don't let them learn about teamwork, all these things.
They thought competition somehow would be bad for our young girls. You can't even imagine that today.
Right?
Nike and Gatorade and everyone's like women's. Now that I almost feel like now that there's money to be made in it, everyone's like, oh, let's jump on the bandwagon. Yeah. But they thought it would be alarming for women to compete because it would somehow, make women tougher, make them.
Mm-hmm. They would learn communication skills.
Of course.
They would learn teamwork. And we couldn't have that at that time in our history. And so there were pockets all over the country where some people stood up to it and said, that's crazy. Our girls work on the farm. They should be able to play basketball, or industrial regions or communities of color. They still played. And that's what the premise of my documentary series is. There were pockets all over the country, and those people did get opportunities. And those that did not kind of were
like, how come they're playing? I want to play.
Exactly. And that's how it all came together. And at the end of the 60s, and that's where Kansas City comes into it. The end of the 60s, there were a group of women that were leaders in colleges that went to the NCAA right here, actually a few blocks from where we are right now, went to Walter Byers and said, women want to compete in sports. And we need a governance structure. We need a national championship structure. And, you know, we'd like that under the NCAA. And they said, I'm sorry, we're an organization for men and by men, and we're not interested.
That's right. The women started with the NCAA and said, hey, come on, we want in. And NCAA said no. So then what does that mean for women's sports at the time? They had to go find a different governing body or come up with their own.
They created one. Yeah, they absolutely had to create one. And that's why this is called If Not For Them. If not for them, if not for that courageous group of women that formed this organization and put it all together, put all the rules together, put the national championship structure together, if they wouldn't have done that, we would be so far behind, because they did it so well over the course of the 70s. In conjunction with Title IX passing, they did it so well that the NCAA went, oh, wait, we do want women's sports. And then that's when women's collegiate sports started, was at that time, because they did it so well in the 70s.
You fascinate me because you've had this tandem career, obviously, as an incredibly successful analyst and broadcaster and all of those things, and opened doors for other women, by the way. I mean, how many women have been doing your job for 30 years? We mentioned Karen Kornacki just retired after 41. She's kind of a unicorn. It's a very small fraternity that you all are in.
Yeah, there's not very many. There's not very many of us have been around that long and been able to tell the stories of women's sports.
So when did you know? You've been doing, you're an analyst 30 years. Did you just start right out, obviously over anyone's broadcast career, you start meeting people. I guess what I'm getting at is, did you know about this history? How did we get here until you started? Some of the women in this documentary are 80 years old.
Right.
Or older.
Yeah. I didn't know about all this history. I always have been a bit of a historian. My senior year of high school in the early 80s, I actually wrote my senior essay on the history of women's basketball.
Bingo.
So I still have it.
I was going to say, do you still have it?
I still have it. And so it's always been in the back of my mind. And then as I went through my career and had opportunities, you know, you're only one track and you do your thing. But then I started meeting people. And when I did start my broadcasting career, I got to call games of some of the absolute legends in women's basketball, from Jody Conrad at Texas to Pat Summitt at Tennessee. I did some UConn games early with Gino Auriemma and Tara Vanderveer, who just retired. And Marion Washington at Kansas, Vivian Stringer at Iowa, then Rutgers. I called some of their games and I realized how they had paved the way for what I have. And so it made me want to really dig in and find out more, and then make sure we tell their stories.
It's a love letter to these women, is it not?
It really is. It really is. I call them the hidden figures of women's sports, because either their stories have been forgotten or never told, and they need to be told.
Brenda Van Langen is our guest this hour. You can text in your questions at 913-586-7798. We are going to play a clip from part of the preview of your documentary. And then, interestingly enough, women's basketball and women's sports came up on Saturday Night Live this weekend. If you missed it, we will play it when we come back. And where do we go from here? Stick around for that and more. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Not that many years ago, girls and women were not allowed to play basketball in most areas of the United States. Those who did have opportunities and those who wanted to play, plus the men and women who supported them, paved the way for what we have now. If not for them, we wouldn't have what we do today. If not for them. I'm Brenda Van Lingen, and I've had the opportunity to play, coach, and broadcast basketball games nearly all my life because of those that blazed the trails and built the foundation for college women's basketball. Through this project, I've had the privilege to interview over 100 legends or those who knew them best. What I found were women who played and coached for the love of the game, women who were passionate about their sport, competitive, proud, but humble.
Wow and wow. It gives me chills. Honoring the women who paved the way in women's sports, all of it, even if you're a casual women's basketball fan, some of the interviews, Brenda, that you have created here are women octogenarians.
Mm-hmm. We are celebrating one of the greatest times in women's sports in our history. 18.9 million people watched the NCAA Women's Basketball Championship. If not for them, we wouldn't have what we do now. And so I interviewed people in their 70s, 80s, and even some in their 90s that played, coached, or were administrators that helped pave the way for what we have. And some of the women in their 80s and 90s have the most incredible stories, most incredible stories.
Well, one of them cries.
Yeah.
Is crying when you ask her about a loss on the basketball court. And she says, I still get emotional about it. After all of these years,
she was a part of a program that flew airplanes all around the country in the 1950s and won 131 straight games in a row. And she felt like she had a bad game and was part of losing that streak.
You're like, sister, you can let that go now.
That's right.
So you mentioned, yes, we have come so far. Yes, this seems like this seminal moment for women's sports where you see Jason Sudeikis down on the court a couple of weeks ago wearing that sweatshirt that said everyone watches women's sports.
Right.
We've had other moments in history, though. Mia Hamm was one of them I mentioned to you off the air, where it felt like there was this momentum. What is different about this snapshot in time with all of the 18 million people that tuned in to watch what I thought was the most exciting basketball out there right now?
Yeah. I think there have been these big peaks that have taken us to this moment. There have been, the 99 soccer team, like you mentioned. Right before that, the WNBA was formed, and the women's basketball team won the gold medal. There have been these peaks, and then we kind of plateau. But I think right now where we are is kind of this amazing, storm of social media, broadcast rights, the fact that Caitlin Clark shoots the ball from 35 feet away from the basket and makes it consistently.
The center logo.
And people are just enamored and amazed by her incredible abilities. But we wouldn't know about it if we didn't have the television coverage. We wouldn't know about it if there wasn't a buzz on social media and people arguing about whether she's the best or she's not the best ever. And, the people that think she's the best because they've been watching women's sports for 6 months are kind of amusing. But those of us that have been watching for a long time know that she's really special. It's just really a special time where all of that is coming together. And the skill and the athleticism of the women in the various sports is incredible to watch.
Do you know how many times I have heard, and they happen to be men, say, I had no idea how aggressive this would be with women's basketball. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, she just hit her head. Oh my God, they're just so aggressive. Like, I didn't know they were so aggressive. You've had court side front view of this for 30 years. Yes, the women are aggressive.
That's right. It's been happening for a while.
Welcome to the party.
That's right. Come on, join. Jump on the bandwagon. We're
happy
to
have you.
We're here for everybody. Absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about my favorite moment this year, when Caitlin Clark is going up and down the court and some detractor somewhere in the stands or maybe one of her opponents, I don't know who it was, she famously, not infamously, screams, "Shut the blank up." And in that moment, I loved her even more than I thought I could possibly love her. And there were a few people that said, "Oh, well, what kind of role model is that?" And I go, "No, no, 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 you don't get to say that." Because men say things all the time that would make anybody blush. This is the same level of aggressiveness and passion and athleticism. You don't get to have it both ways.
That's right. And I think she actually was saying that to somebody on the court, but she turned away from them to say it so that she could kind of release because she had been really, you know, she's very competitive. I'll just tell you, I played college basketball in the 1980s. I walked off the court and yelled a couple of F words really loudly, but there were only 25 people in the entire place.
Right?
Nobody gave a crap.
So what is she like and what has it been like as an analyst watching this? I don't even know what to call it. This moment in women's sports history that you have this front row seat to watch, the sellouts, people waiting in line to watch them play.
It's so amazing. I mean, there have been moments over the years, I've done this for 30 years, and there have been sellout crowds here and there, but the momentum that we have right now is just incredible, and I was so glad I got to do some Big Ten Network games and call a couple of Caitlin Clark's games this year. And so just to be there and feel the buzz and watch the young girls and young boys.
And young boys, yeah.
That were on the sidelines wanting her autograph, and all the people that gave holiday gifts that were Caitlin Clark jerseys. And it's just an amazing time. It's just drawn so many people to our sport. And she's amazing, but she's also lifting up everybody else around her and saying, "Hey, this has been great for a long time." And she's honoring the women that came before her. She's very respectful, and she understands on whose shoulders she stands. And it's that great combination of she's amazing, but she also appreciates where we've come from.
It's a lot to put on a kid, though. And I've said this, you know, you weren't in this room when I was talking with Scott about this. I go, you know, we build these athletes up, and then, you know, the hate comes, and you see the misogyny online, and you see the Angel Reese talking about death threats and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And people have said, well, that's part of it because, you know, they've chosen to do this. Social media, I've always said, I don't know what we would have done if that was around when we were here.
Yeah, right.
It's a lot to put on a kid.
Yeah.
And they're tinkering with a rule. And if you don't want to answer this, you don't have to, where you would not be able to like place bets on certain players' performances in college because the bullying has gotten so bad.
Yeah. I've heard from Charlie Baker, the NCAA president, that that's the biggest issue coming from the student athletes, that they are getting pressure on these prop bets or whatever they call them, where they bet on if they miss their first shot or not, or if they, whatever the little nuances are in a game. And that's not right. We don't need that. And it's not, and it definitely should not translate to putting any pressure on a young person to go out there when they're playing the sport they love. They shouldn't be worrying about
which is already a full-time job, by the way.
That's right.
Because I've heard people say, well, she doesn't have a job. Are you kidding me? You want to talk about the hours you have to put in to be a college athlete at that level today? Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. And now with NIL, it's a blessing because the eyeballs, the fans that they are bringing to the sport, they're being rewarded. But also you better have an agent or a business person or something to figure it out and navigate all along the way so you don't miss opportunities, so you do it the right way. There's a lot to all of it.
So the website is ifnotforthem.com. And when we get back, I'm going to ask you, like, how can people help? There's so many Kansas City connections to this documentary, and I cannot wait for it to start showing. And of course, that's going to be all around town, and we'll let all of you know when that happens. Ifnotforthem.com. And you can also find it on all of the social media channels as we continue our conversation with Brenda Van Leggen and this phenomenal documentary that we cannot wait to share with you, and I cannot wait for you to unleash it into the world. Bring your daughters and let's watch it together. You're listening to Dana and Parks. We're back with much more straight ahead.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
So Caitlin Clark is in the house. This is the WNBA draft night. And you just saw this on social. She's there.
She's wearing Prada. She's there.
She's there wearing Prada.
Yeah, she will be the number one pick in the draft tonight.
And meaning that she goes to Indiana. Mm-hmm. See, if you had asked me this a year ago, I wouldn't have known any of this.
See, you're all over it.
I absolutely love it. One of the things I asked you off the air, and we're not going to get into a big salary debate because it just divides people, but will the salaries get better, not just because of Caitlin Clark, but because of all of the eyeballs that were drawn to the sport that then brings in revenue?
That's right. I mean, that's where the revenue comes from, is primarily the television rights packages. And so that will drive up the salaries for the players. So it's there. It's not as fast as we all want it, but sure, it's on its way.
You know, I've made this analogy because, you know, I'm a golfer, with Tiger Woods, that everyone hated him in the golf world in the beginning because they couldn't beat him. And then they very quickly figured out, wait a minute, we now have our first $1 million purse because of Tiger Woods. And even Phil Mickelson would say, we were fierce competitors. We didn't like each other very much in the beginning, but the money would not be there if it weren't for him. And so you saw last week, one of the players maybe talking some smack talk that, like, yeah, wait till you get here, Caitlin Clark, and you're not playing with 18-year-olds.
Right.
She's going to, in an indirect way, I think, change opportunities for even those who are already playing in the WNBA.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's a lot of players that have played and already have played 20 years, and they know what it's like to be a professional athlete. And there's been a lot of excitement an interest in the WNBA for a lot of years. But Caitlin Clark's bringing a new set of eyeballs, a new set of fans to the sport, and it's pushing investment. You know, it's really pushing more sponsors to say, hey, we need to put money into this because we're going to get a return on our investment. There's bigger television deals that are being signed. And so, you know, it's all part of it. Caitlin Clark is just part of it, but she's creating some new and exciting interest in the sport that a lot of people have built the foundation up for a long time.
It's incredible. Do we have a clip from the Saturday Night Live sketch that, when you first saw this, by the way, you thought Caitlin Clark was maybe being played by an actress. And if you guys missed it over the weekend, this is Caitlin Clark.
The University of Iowa announced that basketball star Caitlin Clark will have her jersey retired and replaced with an apron. Well, the WNBA draft is this Monday, and Iowa star Caitlin Clark is expected to be the number one pick. Here to comment is Caitlin Clark. But nothing for my joke, whatever. I am a fan, Caitlin, by the way.
Really, Michael? Because I heard that little apron joke you did.
Well, yeah, it was a joke. We're just having fun, you know?
You make a lot of jokes about women's sports, don't you, Michael?
I wouldn't say a lot, but, you know, it's not on the regular.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a lot. I actually sort of made a supercut. Take a look.
Well, no, we don't have to do that.
A number of sports bars around the country are promising to only show women's basketball games during March Madness. The bars are known collectively as the Empty Ones. Report claims that recent stories on the Sports Illustrated website were actually generated by AI, and it's already making glaring mistakes. For instance, it made up something called the WNBA. Iowa's Final Four game against UConn was the most watched women's college basketball game ever, with 14.2 million viewers, beating the previous record by 14.2 million viewers.
No, hold on. I think you're a great basketball player. I mean, I can't play like you do.
Yeah, we know. And obviously, I can't tell jokes like you do.
Thank you for that.
But I did write some jokes, and it would mean a lot to me if you read some of them. Just right over there on the cards.
Well. The Indiana Fever have the first pick in this Monday's draft. A reminder that Indiana Fever is a WNBA team and not what Michael Che gave to dozens of women at Purdue University.
See? Okay, okay.
You really wrote this?
She wrote, I'm telling you, I laughed and laughed and laughed.
Loved
but
it.
The beginning of that is not funny. And you have heard these jokes over time. Mm-hmm. I have heard men and quite frankly some women say, no one watches the WNBA. No one watches basketball. Why is it different now? What was the tipping point? You know, there's that book called The Tipping Point, mm-hmm. and there's all different kinds of ways you can study the tipping point. Is it right place, right time, right player?
I think there are a few factors, but I'll tell you what I think the tipping point is was in 2021, right after COVID. That's when the women's Final Four was all in one location in San Antonio. Yep. And remember the video that went viral of the student athlete that took a picture or that took a video of here's our weight room.
Yep.
Here's the men's weight room.
I absolutely remember it.
It was the dumbbells for the women.
And one yoga mat.
Yeah. And one yoga mat. And it was entire room for the men. And it created such an outrage for people like, what? The women are being treated less than? It's like, you know, those of us that have been around for a long time went, yeah, that's the way it's been for a while. And I think just the outrage that it created, social media playing a big part of it.
All over.
All of a sudden, people were interested in what was going on. And I think, you know, all sports, whether it was the WNBA or, you know, look at Nebraska volleyball. Yep. They pulled in 92,000 people into Memorial Stadium to watch a volleyball game. I just think that this collective interest through social media, through television rights, through players like Caitlin Clark, you know, drawing people to the court. I just think it's just this crescendo that we are enjoying right now that finally people just get it, that women's sports is a lot of fun to watch.
What did the women say to you that you sat down with, some of them again in their 80s and 90s, about what they are seeing right now? Because they did not have the benefit of that. They paved the way for it, but they certainly weren't selling out arenas in that way or making any money at all. You ask one of the women in the documentary, did you have a scholarship? And she goes, no, there was no scholarship.
There was no such thing. Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I think they are so proud, those women that paved the way, because they realize what they had to go through just to have an opportunity to play sports, and the barriers that they broke down, and the social norms that they helped to change, that I think they feel a great sense of pride in where things are now. I think some of them, I was just talking to Patsy Neal the other day, the one that actually cries over being part of that, losing the 131 games in a row. And she said, you know, we played it just for the love of the game. And now they're getting this money and they're getting all these different things that there's a lot of pressure. And so she said, we just played for the love of the game. So I think there is a little bit of, you know, nostalgia for them too,
sure,
that they just played to play. But I think a lot of them really are proud of what they built.
So people can actually watch the media preview. Tell them how to do that, because it's about an hour long. And I remember saying to you, the media preview should win an award. It's that well done. And I'm so proud of you for all of the work that went into it. Tell people how they can view what I was able to see over the weekend.
Absolutely. If you follow us on social media or just go to our website, ifnotforthem.com, there's an opportunity there to join our team. If you are a part of our team, and that means you can make a donation to our nonprofit for any amount, it doesn't have to be a lot, any amount we will send you a private link so that you can watch the preview of the 10 episodes. And it's a 5-minute preview of each of the episodes, and it takes you on a story arc from the early 1950s up until the NCAA took over in 1981-82, and basically gives the stories of how we built the foundation for women's sports in this country.
And Title IX. I mean, I thought I knew enough about Title IX to be dangerous. I did not realize. Was it a challenge, Brenda, or someone that just asked the question, I think back in the 70s, does Title IX apply to sports or social activities in college? I wrote this down.
Yeah.
It was actually 1974, the year I was born.
Right, right.
And remind everybody what the question was asked, and the answer blew everybody's mind.
It blew everybody's mind because Title IX was initially just to make sure we provided equitable opportunities for girls and women in the education setting. Women were being denied opportunities to go to law school, to medical school, and those sort of things. And so Title IX was originally passed for that reason, to make sure that women had opportunities in the educational setting. And an NCAA lobbyist that was in Washington, D.C., kind of casually says to members of Congress, so this doesn't have anything to do with sports, right?
Social activities.
I mean, right? Extracurricular activities. They said, well, of course, that's part of the education experience. Yes, it's part of it. And then all hell broke loose because everybody realized that this meant that girls were going to have the same opportunities as boys in sports. And people were pissed. They were trying to change. They were trying to make amendments to stop it from happening. The NCAA spent over $1 million to try to get Title IX squashed so that girls could not have those opportunities. And so, you know, when there's this groundswell I talked about before, these women that did have opportunities in the 60s were in the right leadership positions to make it happen in the 70s, and were building it so that girls in high school and junior high, as well as college, could have opportunities.
So I think it's important if you're listening and you're a coach. I mean, you know that Scott coached girls soccer for decades. It doesn't really just have to be a documentary or this love letter for those who paved the way in basketball. It's
right.
All of it.
And basketball was like the torch-bearing team sport that really broke the barriers. And that opened up for softball and soccer and volleyball, et cetera. So basketball was really a leader in the team sports in a lot of ways. And that's why I shine the light on the basketball people. But a lot of it are just those leaders, the leaders in athletic administration that had to fight the battles. Great story just down the road at Kansas State. This woman named Judy Akers started the women's basketball program mm-hmm. there. And she was able to get a few young women to play, and they were able to start their program. Well, the AIAW had just been formed, which was the organization for women's intercollegiate sports, and they were hosting national championships. They'd hosted one in 1972 in Normal, Illinois, and in Queens College in 1973. So Kansas State wanted to get in on the deal. So Judy Akers said that she would host the AIAW national championship in Manhattan. But she didn't tell anybody on campus because she figured they'd say no. So
come on in. Welcome to Manhattan.
16 teams from around the country traveled to Manhattan, Kansas, and they just took over campus. And the men were so upset about it, they hid the basketballs and the shot clocks so they couldn't practice or play at first. And finally got them, and they hosted a national championship in Manhattan, Kansas, without really telling anybody
about
it.
What a story. What a story. We'll be back to wrap up the hour here in just a moment, and I have to ask you about your broadcast career before I let you out of here. But the website, once again, ifnotforthem.com, ifnotforthem.com. You even have merch. You brought me a T-shirt. I'm going to put this on social. I absolutely love it. Go to ifnotforthem.com. So that you too can be part of this great team, and what a story it is. We're back with much more straight ahead. The website, I had to put my glasses on because I'm old now. ifnotforthem.com. Please go there. And I want you to talk a little bit, Brenda, about all of the local connections when you look back at the history of women's sports and specifically women's basketball, we would be remiss if we didn't bring up Marion Washington, who was with KU, my alma mater, for 30 years.
Yeah. She was the first black woman hired by a predominantly white institution to coach women's basketball, and that was in the early 70s. And she got here from Pennsylvania. She actually played on the first national championship team in 1969. There was the first intercollegiate national championship at Westchester College, and she played on that team. So she won the first national championship specifically for collegiate teams.
Yep.
She was recruited by a woman named Alberta Cox, who's from Raytown, Missouri. Her dad owned a pipe company that sponsored her AAU team called the Raytown Piperettes. And he also funded a lot of our U.S. teams to compete internationally. And his daughter, Alberta Cox, became our first woman to coach a U.S. team in international competition. Right here from Raytown, Missouri. I bet a lot of people don't know that. And she recruited Marion Washington to come to be a part of that. Marion was one of the first two black women to compete for the U.S. internationally. And they thought they were competing and going to be in the 72 Olympics, and it didn't materialize. And they were all heartbroken because they had been training for it for 7 months and then found out that it wasn't going to happen. Mm. So Marion went over to KU because she was also an elite track athlete, discus thrower, met Al Orter one time, and got introduced to people at KU. She met some people. They hired her as the track coach, the women's basketball coach, and the women's AD, and that's when she started at KU and was there for 31 years.
There's just so many local connections. It really is amazing. And the women, by the way, did not appear on the first Olympic team until 1976.
Right.
And they were silver medalists, correct?
That is correct.
Silver medalists.
Yes, and they earned silver medal. And their head coach was Billy Moore, who is from Westmoreland, Kansas.
Oh my gosh, there's another one.
Right? And she won two national championships as a coach, but she was our first Olympic coach. She's one of the greatest stories in my docuseries. And if you don't know who Billy Moore is and you're interested in women's sports, you need to know her name. And I promise you will learn all about her through our docuseries.
If not for them.com, and we will end with this to the young girls listening, the children who say, I want to grow up and be Caitlin Clark, or I want to grow up and be Brenda on the sidelines and be an analyst, you say what?
Anything's possible. And there are more opportunities available than ever before. The sky is the limit. Figure out what path you want to take. Dream bigger than you ever imagined. Whether it's you want to be an athlete or a coach or a broadcaster, whether it's women's sports or men's sports, women can be involved in any of those things. One of the women that was part of a team back in the 60s, her niece was the first woman to be a referee in a Super Bowl game,
wow.
Right?
Yes,
Sarah
yes,
Thomas.
Yes, that's right.
So her aunt was part of one of those AAU teams that won a national championship back in the 60s. So there's all sorts of connections, and you can do whatever you want to do.
Brenda Van Langen, this has been just the best hour. Thank you.
Thank you
for it. If not for them.com, we are back with much more straight ahead.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.